This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's Friday, February 15th, 2019, and welcome to the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. It is cold today. The O'Hare Wind Chill Index right now is zero. And along the lakefront, the wind chill is just 3 above.
And it's a feel-good Friday on Wall Street as we get the latest in the numbers on the Noon Business Hour presented by Old Second Bank. And let's go to Bloomberg and say hello to Elisa Parenti.
Hey there, Rob. Yeah, we're seeing big gains. China's state-run media report reports that progress in U.S.-China trade talks occurred this week in Beijing. The conversation will continue next week in Washington. So the Dow is up 340 points, or 1.3%. NASDAQ gaining 26. S&P up 22. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by 1%. The University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index is on the rebound after the 35-day government shutdown. This month's reading of 95.5 reverses a two-year low. Industrial production down in January. That was the first time that's happened in 8 months. More evidence that economic growth is moderating. The auto industry accounted for much of the slump. Not all is bleak in the property market. Mortgage delinquencies dropped in the fourth quarter to the lowest rate in almost 19 years. Big gains for crude oil futures right now at $55.37. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks. We're talking today about the president's remarks about the government spending and the wall, and also what is the fallout from Amazon pulling out of New York.
And it's Entrepreneur Friday. We will talk to the head of Francesca's Restaurant Group, how they maintain their longevity after over 25 years of not only operating in Chicago, but elsewhere in the country. And then some big banks are getting into the cryptocurrency game. We'll talk about that at 12:49.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
We're hearing a lot of reaction to Amazon's decision to pull plans for a campus in New York. We're going to cover that in our next segment. Right now, a partial shutdown of the government has been avoided while the president declares a border emergency. It's also a busy day of data. We're joined by Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Gus. Where do you see the situation right now with the shutdown?
Well, it looks like we'll manage to avoid a shutdown, so that's good news. We did lose some economic output in the first quarter from the extended shutdown that we had that lasted through most of January. That being said, we generally find that when there is a shutdown, that any lost output is made up in the subsequent quarter. So I don't think it's going to cause any permanent damage to the U.S. economy. Certainly the news that we've avoided a second shutdown is good news for the economy, and I think things look pretty solid right now.
Anything in the bad news category that you're disturbed about?
In terms of the data, I mean, you know, we did get some weak data on industrial production. So on the industrial side of the economy in January, manufacturing was soft. We saw a decline there in pretty much all segments of manufacturing. And then we also, yesterday, we got a big drop in retail sales, so consumer spending for December, which was surprisingly large. My guess is that there's a data issue there and that consumers are actually in pretty good shape. So we're certainly watching the data right now, but I still think that we will see continued economic expansion throughout 2019.
President Trump's statement from the White House, which turned into a news conference regarding the border wall, the national emergency declaration over the border wall, also contained a little bit of news regarding the China negotiations. He's always the salesman, so he says things are going extremely well in the negotiations with China. Based on, does the rest of the economic community share that assessment that we're close to a deal and that deal will favor the United States?
I don't know if we're close to a deal, but certainly I think that the administration thinks that we're making progress, so that's good news. Trade is not a zero-sum game. It's not that if the United States wins, China loses, or vice versa. I certainly think that we can come up with an agreement with the Chinese government that allows for improved economic growth both here and in China that would allow both sides to claim victory. My expectation is that's what will come out of this. I think as long as the status quo remains in place, that's good news for the U.S. economy and good news for the U.S. stock market.
Going forward, after this latest government shutdown, they used to be a once-in-a-generation event. Now they're a once-a-year event. Given the nature of partisanship and the nature of how dug in both sides seem to be, is this this style of brinksmanship, is this going to exist? Is this going to be a regular thing going forward? And what does that mean not only for the economy but for people who rely on the numbers generated by the federal government?
I mean, it certainly does appear that the shutdowns are becoming more frequent. Again, you know, they typically don't do a lot of economic damage, but I am concerned that if we get them more often, that we get them every year, that they're more extended, then it could start to do some serious permanent damage to the U.S. economy. It does make my life as an economist more difficult when we're not getting the data. You know, the data on fourth quarter GDP has been delayed by about a month. And it makes it more difficult to track the economy. That makes it more difficult for the Federal Reserve to do their job. So certainly timelier access to economic data would be good news for me, and I think for the ability of policymakers to do a good job in guiding the U.S. economy.
Well, it's interesting yesterday that we had economic reports that in some instances were a little scary, but also economics professors and others that we talk with said that's got to be turned over. When we examine these, in a few months, it's probably going to be different.
That's right. I mean, obviously, the December retail sales, which I mentioned, were particularly weak. That has been noticeably delayed. My guess is that we'll get a substantial upward revision to that. I think it's going to take a couple of months for the data to settle out from the shutdown. But my expectation is that by the time we get to, early spring, that the data will show that the U.S. economy remains in solid shape.
Well, thank you, as always, for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There may be Chicago implications to Amazon's decision not to use New York as a location for its second headquarters. Let's get the latest now from Spencer Soper, who is a reporter for Bloomberg News based in Seattle, Washington, Amazon's backyard. Spencer, welcome to the program. Chicago was one of the finalists for HQ2. We know there was at least one site visit as the HQ2 process unfolded over the past 2 years. What is the impact on Chicago, if any, now that Amazon has decided to forget about the New York site and focus entirely on Alexandria, Virginia?
Yeah, that's where it gets a little hard to say. What we know is that Amazon said, we're not going forward with New York. We're not pushing people to Alexandria, Virginia, and we're not pushing people to Nashville. So they're going to just kind of continue with those plans as if New York were still happening. And then what they said about the growth that was supposed to go to New York is that they'll distribute it among their 17 other locations around the country. This would include, Boston, New York, San Francisco, and Chicago. So there could be some peripheral benefits of this, but certainly not a reopening of this search and, the 25,000 jobs coming, all to Chicago.
This HQ2 process has reignited the debate over tax incentives and packages that cities put together to lure corporate headquarters to their municipality. You see it with corporate headquarters. You see it with sports facilities. With New York essentially saying thanks but no thanks to Amazon, or at least holding the line on certain aspects of the negotiations, will this embolden other cities to take a tougher stand against corporate headquarters in corporate America?
It could, and this debate has been raging for decades, right, about corporate welfare and the need for these things and pitting cities against one another. It's still kind of how business gets done, and it's and there hasn't been any federal legislation to prevent it. That would probably be the only way to prevent it, because we'd never see like a truce among mayors and governors everywhere to no longer play this game. But I guess I'm just not so sure that that was the deciding factor here. I know it certainly came up in the rhetoric. You know, why is New York a state and a city that has other needs for infrastructure and schools and housing, you know, giving $3 billion in tax breaks to one of the world's most valuable companies led by the world's wealthiest man. But that was a good, a good rhetorical question. But it really seemed like the main issue here was that a lot of the local elected officials were simply left out of this process. The folks who would be dealing with the headaches the most and hearing from their constituents the most about the headaches were just completely marginalized in this and had no voice in it at all. I think that's really the bigger issue on how this whole thing unraveled.
Is there a possible impact on housing here, people getting ready to join the thousands?
No, I mean, no one from Amazon had actually moved there. There was certainly a lot of speculation around the housing market, and that was one of the fears, was that this kind of prosperity bomb that Amazon could bring would increase rents and increase property values, and some people will get squeezed out. So that was certainly a concern. But then in terms of like, did some speculators like snatch up homes and get burned on it when this suddenly unraveled? I'm just not sure with it, given how quickly this thing happened and then unhappened.
Unhappened, exactly. Thanks for joining us today, Spencer. Nice to meet you. Spencer Soper is a reporter at Bloomberg News in Seattle. And still ahead, check of the markets from Bloomberg. Later, Entrepreneur Friday taking a single restaurant, growing it to a group with more than two dozen locations.
WBBM News Time, 1225. WBBM Business News, sponsored by Baird. And here's Elisa Parenti.
Rob, the Dow is up 332 points, or 1.3%. NASDAQ on the rise by 24, and the S&P is higher by 21. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg gaining almost 1%. President Trump says talks are going extremely well. China's President Xi says there's been, quote, important progress. So investors are pleased with that news. And crude oil futures are higher by 1.5%, rising above $55. Crude up 5.5% this week. So that's helping to lift the energy sector. Now let's turn to Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal. Kurt?
Well, good afternoon, Lisa. Grain markets are higher as we go through the noon hour. Corn futures found support of a 205,000-ton sale to unknown destination. Beans are higher due to a better-expected NOPA crush report. But the wheat market's been under pressure from commodity selling due to the market moving to new contract lows. Corn futures unchanged up 0.5 cent. Soybeans 3 to 3.5 cents higher. And the wheat market 4 to 5 cents lower. This is Kurt Kimmel, Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Kurt. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are gaining ground. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Entrepreneur Friday, we meet the founder of a restaurant group started in Chicago back in the 1980s. It's grown from a single spot to 27 locations in three states.
J.P. Morgan rolling out the first U.S. bank-backed cryptocurrency.
And on Wall Street right now, the Dow Industrials are up 330 points, the NASDAQ up almost 20, S&P 500 up by 20.
Mostly sunny, blustery, and very cold today, a high of 22 with the AccuWeather real field temperatures no higher than the single digits. It's 13 degrees in Chicago right now, but it feels like 4 below. The Noon Business Hour continues, presented by Old Second Bank.
Markets are trading higher today, and we're joined by Susan Schmidt, who is head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Susan. How are you feeling about the markets right now?
Thank you. Well, I'm feeling pretty good about the markets right now. I think we're seeing a nice return to positive sentiment. We got the consumer numbers out, consumer sentiment index numbers out today, and that was a lift up from where we were last month. I think that shows that people got over that fright in December and are on the right track. And I also think that we're seeing a lot of relief in the market as we see almost everything trade up today, as we reach some sort of thought that there might be a conclusion. We never want to get too certain here. It's been back and forth between China and the U.S. on trade, but it certainly seems that we're getting a lot more positive signaling on that, and I think that's what is lifting the markets here.
Well, there were some reports yesterday that had some people saying, oh, there's a possibility there could be recession by the end of the year. Do you take that?
People have been saying that for the last 3 years. And so you have to remember that we are at the end of a long recovery cycle. This has been a slow but steady recovery from the 2008 recession. We are really seeing the market come back here in a gradual pace. But what we're seeing are credible earnings reports from companies. The worst was feared as we ended December. January, we're up 17% from those Christmas Eve lows. January is really showing to be a positive month, and we've heard very positive commentary from our companies, and the CEOs are talking about what they're doing. It wasn't nearly as bad as the market had come to expect. And I think that has bolstered confidence back to, let's get back to basics, let's look at the fundamentals, let's look at business operations and see how they're actually performing in this environment. Our economy continues to slowly chug along, and I don't want to rush it into a demise. I think we've got a good backstop here still with the consumer feeling good about where they are.
The headline, of course, will be about the National Emergency Declaration over wall funding. But the other side of the coin is they reached a deal to avert another government shutdown, and the markets and probably everybody else involved in the economy is happy to have that sweet, sweet consistency back.
That's right, Rob, and that's where we really see the relief in the market. Remember that this has been a very emotional market. We've been hit by headlines, and so the two issues that were overhanging in December and really drove that downward spike were concerns about China and U.S. relations and trade, and we walked right into a government shutdown, and there was looming threat that there would be a second round of that, another shutdown to come. And so we've seen compromise on that. I think that's all the U.S. market needs to see right now, is to know that there is some compromise. It's not going to go into dire situation. And I think that's language is translating over into the trade talks as well. People feel that some compromise will be reached. That's a lot of relief.
What are some of the sectors that are jumping out at you right now? I can't believe it, we're in mid-February right now of 2019. What's really kind of shaping up to be the early winners and losers of this year?
Well, I continue to like financials. They're up a lot today. In fact, almost every sector is up in the green today. It's hard to find a stock that's down. So you can really see the optimism that's come back to the market. And I think that's optimism for the economy. I don't think that we're at, in an imminent rollover here on the economic front. I think we are still chugging along in a slow and steady pace. And there is a lot of underlying strength. That bodes well for our regional and local banks that get to serve that business community and can see growth in their business as they help support the growing businesses, the startup businesses. These consumers who are feeling good about the economy overall are all been going back to those local and regional banks to draw on finances, use them as depositories. It's a good situation to be in. I also think you're seeing a lot of good consumer trend overall, where the consumer's spending. Find the places where the consumer is spending. They're spending differently than they have in the past, but they're still spending.
Okay, Susan, always great to have you on this program. Nice to talk with you. Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors here in Chicago.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and this afternoon we're focusing on a business that many enter but few survive. And welcome in Chef Scott Harris, founder of Francesca's Restaurant Group based in Chicago. Scott, welcome to the program. You got into the restaurant game in 1992, and if we measure dog years by factors of seven, how long is 25 years in the restaurant business?
Oh, it's a pretty long time, especially when I was in it since I was 14, so it's a lot longer than that, Rob. But that's a fantastic business. You have to have heart and passion for it, and the people in the industry that know, that are chefs that really have passion for it, it's a wonderful industry.
Now, before you decided to hang up your shingle with Mia Francesca on Clark in 1992, you did have an extensive resume in kitchens at some big, great names, not only in Chicago but elsewhere. At what point did you want to go into business for yourself and design your own concept? And how long did it take for the Mia Francesca kind of idea to come together?
Well, all through my 20s, I worked at some great restaurants around town, some of the best restaurants, actually. I just got great experience. And when I was about 27, I met my partners, Michael Noon and Terry Alexander. They owned a bar called Danny's. And we scraped together our every last penny we had, and we said, well, let's do this restaurant over on Clark Street. We had our parameters between Belmont and Sheridan and over to Irving Park. But we just started out with, you know, we did a lot of the work ourselves. And just hard work got it done.
Scott,
Chris, go ahead.
Back in 1992, what has really changed in your opinion since 1992 in this?
Back in 1992, I think the people went out for food. They went out to get a great meal. I think now throughout the years, like I asked my daughter, hey, if you got $40 in your pocket, where are you going? She first says, I want the sexy restaurant, the cool place. And then it's second, I want a great drink, great alcohol, great cocktail. And third's the food. She might get a bruschetta and split it with her friend with a salad. I think that's the biggest difference with the millennials coming up now, which is a huge industry. We're trying to figure them out and try to accommodate as much as we possible. But, yeah, it's a sexy place now. Back in the day, it was food. I used to go to Gennaro's and, you know, the place, I don't know if anyone remembers that, aging myself. But it was all about the food. It wasn't much to look at, but, you know.
As a founder of the restaurant group, can you tell when a recession is picking up most people don't even know it's there yet? What kind of signals of the economy do you get in this business?
You know, we follow that. We follow it closely, but it really doesn't hit until it hits. Like back in 08, 09, 10, that was a rough one. The restaurant industry takes a hit. It was like the polar vortex a couple weeks ago. That's a rough hit on some of these restaurateurs that, you know, a lot of family guys are just surviving. So those are big hits when you have to close for a day. But we follow the markets. We kind of follow what's happening. It always terrifies us whenever we, you know, when you talk, when you hear the news, they're always talking, oh, my God, you know, recession's coming, it's coming. So we just follow. We try to keep our price point at a great, with great quality, great food. We try to keep the price point low. So we're always, you know, competitive in the market. We don't take too much of a hit if there is a recession.
I'm sure that if I ask you what, you know, your favorite of your restaurant, it's like your babies, you can't really tell. But what are some of the ones you're really, really proud of?
Oh, the original, for sure. I mean, that's where it all started. I was so proud of that. We never expected to, you know, I just wanted to make a living. My biggest reason was to be my own boss back in the day. I didn't want to work for anybody. And it just hit. And then we just opened up a Fat Rosie's concept, which I'm very proud of. It's a Mexican concept. Feels like you're in Mexico. It's one of those party places where you come in. I think people are looking for that now with their kids, a little more entertainment, not just come in, get sat, say goodbye, say hello, and leave. It's a fun atmosphere. And then I'm really excited. We just opened up with my long-term partner, Joe Filey. We opened up a place called Joe's Wine Bar just on the 13th, 2 days ago. That was the day we opened up Francesca's, Mia Francesca, 27 years ago. So I opened up on that day because obviously, hopefully it brings us good luck. But that's over on Fulton Street, over in Fulton Market. And this guy, Joe Filey, is magical. You have to go and meet him over there. He's a wonderful person. You'll leave there laughing.
Very quickly, you mentioned you know, how your daughter approaches a restaurant versus how you approached a restaurant back in 1992. And you talked about that people are a lot more discerning, at least the millennial generation, when it comes to the alcoholic beverages that come with your meal. How have cocktails evolved since 1992? Because if you look at old menus from maybe 30 or 40 years ago, it was a couple of beer selections, a couple of wine selections, a martini, a Manhattan, and that's it. How has it changed since then?
Oh, geez, the millennials, these new people that make cocktails, these mixologists, they're like chefs now. I put them in equal level as chefs. They're scientists. And these cocktails, we have a guy, Leonard, over at Joe's right now. He makes all kinds of infused ice cubes, and it's really changed. I mean, it's developing tremendously in what's going on with that. Same with the wine. They're coming up with some wines from all over the world that are just fantastic. But, yeah, the kids are demanding those cocktails. As you see around the city, all the cooler places have those mixologists. They're fantastic. They can make a good living off that, too.
It's interesting talking to you. Thanks for joining us today, and congratulations on your success, Chef Scott Harris is founder of Francesca's Restaurant Group here in Chicago. Still to come on the Noon Business Hour, a major American bank enters the cryptocurrency game.
Information you can bank on. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
JP Morgan is rolling out the first cryptocurrency backed by a U.S. bank. Let's learn more from Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital and portfolio manager of the blockchain investment strategy based in Glenview. Bill, welcome back to the program. Let's talk about what JP Morgan is doing in the world of cryptocurrency. Is this Bitcoin or is this something else?
Well, it's not Bitcoin, but it is the technology that Bitcoin uses to be able to transfer value from one person to the next with like a unique secure code. So this is really, really bullish, not only for Bitcoin, but for the technology of distributed ledger technology. So this is really, really exciting stuff, and I'm glad to see a major player like Jamie Dimon, even though he's kind of been he's bashed Bitcoin in the past, he's bashed cryptocurrency, but their embracing of this technology really is a huge stamp of approval, in my opinion.
And it's with Bitcoin before, I mean, just because it would have these wild swings in valuation, you would have a lot of speculators or get-rich-quick types jump into it and then get out. But what are kind of the practical applications of cryptocurrency to the point where a JP Morgan would actually want to get involved?
Well, this is going to be an internalized, closed cryptocurrency, really for the bank and its international customers. It's not going to be available to retail clients just yet. And you have to remember that JP Morgan services maybe 80% of the Fortune 500 companies, which are international companies. They move about $6 trillion a day, and they do it digitally. Wire transfers, foreign exchange currency transactions, wire transfers, SWIFT payments, all that stuff takes days or weeks to transfer international settlements from one place to another. And by JP Morgan creating this internalized cryptocurrency, which is more like a stable coin, it's like a U.S. dollar or money market fund where it's priced at $1 per token. This creation of this internalized token is going to permit the facilitation of payment of settlements internationally faster than it takes time for me to even finish this sentence.
Do we know yet if Jamie Dimon has taken off his comment that Bitcoin is a fraud?
I don't think he has, and I think he firmly believes that Bitcoin, the public blockchain, its concept of being a digital gold or a new global currency, I don't think he's going to change his mind about that. Honestly, he doesn't need Bitcoin because JP Morgan is a lot bigger than that. So I think he has his sights set much, much higher than just the quote-unquote retail use of Bitcoin by private citizens and crypto anarchists and things like that. This is, in my opinion, a much, much, much bigger deal because it's going to affect everybody on the globe, and it's going to be he'll be internalizing order flow on a global scale. This is a big deal, in my opinion.
How long do you think it will take for this to really get going in America, especially?
Well, I would say we probably won't even know that we're using it. I think the pilot program is going to start small with just a few, a small handful of international clients to see how the transfer of payments go. But I would give it probably a good, 18 months, maybe 2 years of solid testing and making sure that all the accounts are correctly debited and credited, that the settlement happens almost instantaneously, like I believe it will. And then from there, I think you're going to see them move faster, where they're going to replace the SWIFT international payment system. They're going to replace the current cryptocurrency called Ripple that banks are using for international settlements. So again, we have reputational risk at here, so I think they're going to move slow. But once they can prove it, they're going to roll it out faster than you can possibly imagine.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. It's fascinating stuff. Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital and portfolio manager of the blockchain investment strategy based in Glenview. More information at senecalcapital.com.
Let's take a look at the markets. Here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, we continue to see nice gains today. The Dow up 345 points, or more than 1.33%. NASDAQ gaining 27, S&P up 22. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is higher by almost 1%. Coke is still the world's number one soft drink maker, but investors this week have shown a clear preference for Pepsi. That stock is at a two-month high thanks to Pepsi's recent sales growth in snacks and beverages. The maker of Doritos and Gatorade is even reporting sales growth in North America after price hikes. Coke shares tumbled yesterday. It reported a North America sales decline and a consumer backlash against its price increases. Whatever spooked Americans in December and January is fading. The University of Michigan's preliminary confidence report for February shows a sharp rebound. With Business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.